You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.
Hello all. Welcome to another episode of Armchair Cricket Podcast, a podcast focusing on Test cricket by armchair critics of the game. I'm your host, Ajit. In today's episode, we have a really, really special guest. Somebody whom, well, seems to have all the inside scoop about Netherlands cricket. Isaac, who runs the Netherlands Cricket Insider Twitter account, and he is a Netherlands Cricket Insider. Hello, Isaac. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be on in here, and I'm excited to talk about Dutch cricket and the Cricket World Cup in general. It's going to be great to chat with you today.
Indeed. Before we begin, from your accent, it's more or less obvious you have an Antipodean origin, or you live in one of the Antipodean cricket-playing countries. So I'm assuming you're Australian?
Yes, I can't hide it with my accent, unfortunately. But I was born in Australia, but I'm predominantly Dutch. So my dad was born in a small town outside of Utrecht called Lupik, a very small town.
Holy cow.
And all my grandparents are Dutch as well. So, and we live around a lot of Dutch people. There's a lot of Dutch people in the town we live. We even got a Dutch windmill in the town that we live, a red Dutch windmill. So it's very Dutch where I live, and my family still remain very Dutch. My grandfather, my opa, he has a very strong Dutch accent. So I've always been really strongly connected to my Dutch roots, and that's that merged with cricket. I really come to love the Dutch through my connection to the Netherlands. That's kind of my connection to the Netherlands, and that's how I've kind of got into the KNCB Insider through that.
Well, it looks like, you know, you seem to have all the right sort of connections in this group, and that's very nice to see for us Dutch cricket fans that you're able to send out some very timely tweets when it comes to, you know, players and what they're up to and all of those things. That's very nice. And for us fans also, maybe sometimes you also tweet out a few things about the squads before the toss and so on. So it's always useful to follow your account. So any Dutch cricket supporters out there, I definitely recommend Isaac's account, the Netherlands Cricket Insider.
It's a pleasure to do what I do. And that's kind of how the account came to be, as a supporter of the Dutch from another country. I know there's so many Dutch fans right across the world, not just in the Netherlands, but there's a lot of people that want to be connected to the Netherlands team and what's happening. And there hasn't been much of a social media presence on the KNCB on their social media over the years. So as a fan that was wanting to connect with the team and be provided with news and updates, I saw that there was a pathway there online. So I kind of just started as a little thing, and it kind of grew and blew up bigger than I could have imagined. I've really enjoyed doing it because I've seen the joy that it brings a lot of Dutch fans right across the world, and even just people that are interested in Dutch cricket. It's a pleasure to help grow the game and promote the game and promote the players and promote these talented players right across the world and what they're doing not just for the Dutch, but in other leagues right across the world. So, yeah, it's been a pleasure, especially qualifying for the Cricket World Cup and now being in the Cricket World Cup on the big stage. It's exciting to promote the game and really help push Dutch cricket more and more on the social medias. So, yeah, it's great to do what I get to do.
Perfect. Whom would you support when Australia take on Netherlands?
Oh, that's a tough question. But I think because of my strong ties for what I do now, I have to say the Netherlands. And I love a good underdog as well. So there has been some moments in sporting history where I've had to been torn between the Netherlands and Australia. When the Soccer World Cups have happened in the past, I've actually tended to support the Dutch because Australia is so bad at soccer that there was no point supporting them because they usually were out in the group stages and the Dutch would always progress through. So I'd always support the Dutch. But I haven't been as torn in cricket because in my lifetime of me supporting the Dutch, I've never really, I've never had the opportunity to watch both teams play each other because they've only played, the last time they played each other was in 2011. And I came more into contact and started to support the Dutch. It was around when they played the Cricket World Cup in Bangladesh, where they had that crazy win against Ireland, where they chased down that massive score within 13.5 to progress to the World Cup, to the next stage of the World Cup. And that's when I kind of got really interested in Dutch cricket. So I've never had to choose between both sides in cricket ever. So this will be the first time, but I'll definitely be getting behind the Dutch and barracking for them. So I'm really excited for Wednesday night next week. I've got it penciled in my calendar to have a long night watching that game.
That was going to be my next question. So you plan to stay up the whole night? Because I know it's at all odd hours in Australia and New Zealand if you want to watch the game.
Yeah, no, it's penciled in the calendar. I've told my wife, I just got recently married a few weeks ago. So I've just got back from my honeymoon. But I told my wife a long time ago before we got married that there was this day and this game was happening. And I'm like, there's nothing getting in the way of me watching this game because these opportunities don't come up often. So I'm going to be staying up at night, all night watching it. We'll go to the early hours of the morning. I was glued to my screen, my phone in my bed with the South Africa game right to the early hours of the morning because of we were going to win that. So I'm sure it'll be the same with Australia and the Netherlands. So I'm really excited for that opportunity. It's going to be an amazing opportunity to watch both my nations versus each other. So I'm hoping for a close game. So it's going to be great.
Indeed. Let's get into the South Africa-Netherlands game then straight away. So first of all, the result, a pleasant surprise, surely?
Yeah, it's fantastic to see the result, especially so early in the tournament. You were seen with some of the nations coming into these tournaments that they can, under the pressure, that they don't show up and you can get on a roll of a losing streak and constantly lose games. So I've loved how the Dutch have presented themselves this tournament with confidence. You know, you've heard from them, from Scott Edwards and all the players through press conferences in the lead up to the tournament saying, we want to make semifinals. We want to get to a World Cup final, which is the motivation to have. That's the perspective to have, rather than trying to, you know, just win a game or win a few games. So that coming out strong in that first game versus Pakistan, that brought a lot of hope that you know, we can compete, you know, against these nations. So and then that game, you know, didn't pan out quite the way it could have panned out after the strong start they had. So I've always got the, you know, the glass half full perspective. You know, I'm a very hopeful person. I always come in with the this perspective of we're a chance here, you know. So I was hopeful, you know, and we bet them, we upset them in the World Cup, Cricket World Cup in Australia, the T20 World Cup last year. So there was a bit of that thing of like, oh, we have, you know, we have competed against them and we have this like kind of psychological edge on them in that sense that we upset them when they were, you know, basically heading for a semi-final in that tournament. They were on a high, they were going quite well, and we upset them and caused them to kind of ultimately bow out of the T20 World Cup. So, and South Africa was coming on high. They've been in brilliant form. So there was a bit of a hope that, you know, this is not the perfect time for an upset. So, which ultimately they did in the end, which was amazing to see.
Indeed. So first of all, I also was able to catch much of the match, but second half, I spent more time. First half, I was only able to really see it towards the end, the last 5 hours of the Dutch batting mainly. It's a work day and it sort of clashes perfectly with the work day. So sometimes it's a bit tough for us. But, you know, the way Scott Edwards played and towards the end, I thought Logan van Beek held one end up. And then once he got out, it was mostly Roelof van der Merwe and Aryan Dutt. Did those runs of Aryan Dutt surprise you? Roelof van der Merwe, we know, is a well-known quantity. He can do his, he can hit the ball long. But Aryan Dutt?
Well, it is surprising because he hasn't shown it necessarily in international cricket. But when you look to him in his domestic cricket in the top class, and even his under-19 cricket with the Dutch, we've seen him actually open the batting before, and he tends to bat in the middle order in top-class cricket. And there's been a few times where he's actually opened the batting with his side. He plays for the VRA in the top class. So he has actually shown a lot that he can bat just as much as he bowls. But in international cricket, you know, he's hit a few sixes. He's coming in at 10. There isn't that many opportunities to, you know, really showcase your stuff when you're coming that low in the order. And especially there's been some times where he's come in, you know, under a lot of pressure when there's been some big batting collapses for the Dutch, and he's got out quite easily. So he has shown that he's got a lot of potential, but hasn't showed that on the big stage. So when he showed that, you know, he's shown that in the past, but so it was great to see that him shine in that area, which would have been very surprising for a lot of fans out there because they haven't seen him actually do that in the past. So yeah, it was a surprise, but not a surprise at the same time, seeing him perform in that way.
Indeed. I think they took the South African bowlers by a little bit by surprise, because from 112 for 6 after 26 overs, you thought when Teja got out, it was 27 overs even, you thought they're in a bit of trouble. It might become a bit predictable. They might not get the runs. But most of the runs and the credit for, you know, taking the innings along goes to skipper Edwards. I mean, he had a little bit of a fallow time so far leading up to the World Cup and even in the World Cup games. But he's broken out of his shell. Now we saw the real Scott Edwards in that game.
Yeah, he's batted incredibly. He's a very dynamic and versatile player. Incredibly great, incredibly good at the sweep shot. But it was just great to see him come under pressure, like batting at 7. You know, it's not the easiest position to come and bat at. But I think when Roelof came into bat and he started teeing off, it was where, you know, they started to really take the game away. And South Africa bowled really well early on, but they kind of became more predictable towards the end. And it was really interesting, like Scott Edwards is an incredibly good player of spin, and they only started bowling spin when he started to bat, which is incredibly like perplexing to me as a fan. You're like, you're bowling to somebody that, you know, that suits them, and that's a going to benefit a player like Scott Edwards, and that's going to help him get in and set himself up for a good inning. So I found that really fascinating that they brought Maharaj on at the same time when Scott Edwards came out to bat. And that was the first time they introduced spin in that whole match. So they kind of played into Scott Edwards' book, which ultimately benefited him. But yeah, it's been incredible to see Scott Edwards but the way he has, he's improved significantly over the last few years, and he's thrived under his leadership. He's an incredible leader. I couldn't think of anyone better to be leading the Dutch right now. And he's one of probably the most important Dutch player that the Dutch have right now, probably after Bastelader. Just with the leadership that he brings, he's an incredibly great wicketkeeper as well. He's actually got the most dismissals so far in the tournament, in the Cricket World Cup so far, and he's incredibly dynamic with the bat, and he can bat anywhere. He can open the batting and he can bat it anywhere as low as seven. And sometimes I probably would like to see him bat higher in the order, but I think the way that the Dutch have kind of set up their batting, especially for this tournament, is like to have a very versatile batting order. We've got the likes of Slaven Engelbrecht and Teja Niitamaru, who can, you know, bat anywhere from, you know, three to seven. So I think they've kind of going in with that perspective of being able to shift things up depending on the where the game's at, and to be strategic in that sense. So I'd like to see him bat up the order, but I can understand why they would leave him to late to be able to pile on the runs late and, you know, match the spinners when they bring the spinners later on in the game. So it'll be interesting to see later on in the tournament when they go to some of these spinning wickets, if they bring him on early, because he's clearly the Dutch's best batter against spin.
Right. That one, and also I expect a bit more from the openers. They had a good start in the tournament, but in at least the last game, they couldn't do much. But between Vikramjit Singh, Max O'Dowd, Colin Ackerman and Bastelader, they carry the hopes of the Dutch batting, don't they?
Yeah, definitely. I've looked up in the Cricket World qualifiers, Vikram Singh and Max O'Dowd were a very strong opening partnership. In that tournament, in the qualifiers, they averaged 63 between both of them opening up. Which is, and they're probably, I think they're the most successful opening partnership for the Dutch. I've seen some stats about it, but I can't quote you on it. But this tournament, they're only averaging 23, which is a quite significant drop compared to the previous tournament. And so I'm really looking for more from them. They've shown that they can bat really well together, and they suit each other's game styles. So I'm really looking for partnerships at the top of the order. The Dutch have shown that they can put a partnership slower down the order, but they're, you know, the highest wicket partnership between for a first wicket and second wicket is only 28 runs, and that happened in the first game between Pakistan. And the highest second wicket partnership was also against Pakistan. That was 22 between Vikram Singh and Colin Ackerman, and every other first or second wicket partnership has been less than 20 runs after that. So I'm really looking for more. It's been frustrating watching the Dutch batting, especially in the top order, because there's been so many partnerships between 20 and 30 runs. I think I counted it up and there's about 10 partnerships between 20 to 30 runs. So as a Dutch fan, I've been wanting more. And there's been a few times they get to that 20 mark and I'm like, oh, they're looking really good right now. And they're looking like they're setting themselves up for, you know, 40-run, 50-run partnerships, which you need if you're going to win games. You need 40-run, 50-run partnerships that you put on, and you grow those to 70-run, 80-run, 100-run partnerships. But they're getting a lot of these really small starts and then getting out cheaply after that. So, I'm really looking for more from the top four, but especially that opening partnership between Vikram Singh and Max O'Dowd, and they have shown that they can do it. They've shown that they can put quick runs in on the power play and be dynamic in the power play. So I'm especially looking at Max O'Dowd. He's showed that he's incredibly talented in the ODI format, and I'm really expecting big things in these next six games. I'm really hoping that we can see his ODI. Debut ODI century, maiden century. I'm really hoping that we can see something big from Max O'Dowd in the next few games. And this matchup next against Sri Lanka is the perfect matchup, especially as they haven't had the most successful tournament and they're missing a few of their key players through injury. I think the Dutch will be looking to ride off the momentum of this win against South Africa and to take advantage of a wounded Sri Lanka who haven't managed to show much so far in this tournament. So, there's a lot more for the Dutch to show definitely in their batting going forward.
Absolutely. Wonderful. So coming to their bowling against South Africa, well, they started steadily. Bouma and Quinton de Kock sort of set up a small platform. Chasing just under 6 and over, it wouldn't have been that much of a problem if you think about it for South Africa, because they've been making big runs. You would think in this tournament they would be able to chase this down as well. But then I think, first of all, it was Ackerman. That was an inspired move from the skipper to bring Ackerman on. One more spinner just as early as the fourth over.
I was very impressed with the captainship and the coaching in that moment, opening with Dart, the matchup against de Kock. And it really seemed like they had that mindset that they didn't really care what Bouma did, but they really went in with that mindset of de Kock is the key wicket here, and especially because he's been making big runs, that if they can get that wicket early on, that can have a flow-on effect into getting wickets throughout the rest of the South African batting lineup. So they bowled Logan van Beek that second over, and Dart again, and then they brought Colin Ackerman on. And I remember he bowled a tidy over in his first over, Colin Ackerman did, and then that his second over, he went for Bouma him for a big six and a four as well. And I thought that maybe they may, you know, take him off then, because, you know, going for some big runs in that over, they may like see that as like, you know, this not working, you know, we'll try something different, go back to pace. But they backed him in for that next over, and then that was when de Kock gloved it and Edwards took that catch, and it was just incredibly good to see that they backed in the game plan, and they were going all in and getting that wicket, and that's, you know, kind of spiraled from there and really brought that early collapse that saw South Africa falling for 4 for 44 early on, really bringing the Dutch right into this game.
Absolutely. And then, of course, Rula van der Merwe had to get into the act. He got rid of Bouma and Rasif van der Dusen, two very, very dangerous batsmen. And then sort of, I think, a little bit of a panic set in when suddenly these, you know, 3-4 wickets fell in a heap. And at 3 for 42, when Aidan Markram also got out, you thought, you know, oh God, what's happening, if you're a South Africa fan? And from that point on, I think Heinrik Klaassen and David Miller sort of steadied the ship a little. They were scoring at, you know, more or less expected pace. But then, the way Heinrik Klaassen got out, that was a little bit of a surprise.
That was a key wicket for the Dutch. It was definitely a surprise in the sense that he was looking dangerous at that point. He was like the one that player that was really looking at could take the game away from the Dutch and really caused the Dutch to, you know, kind of crumble under pressure. He was going at a runner bowl and going quite steady there, and he's shown recently, how damaging he can be with the bat and how it can take games away from teams. So when he hit that one, I think it was to Vikram Singh, that was really the point where there was like, I thought we could really, you know, we really could do this and we really could win this game. And that was really when there was a lot of hope and still that, you know, we were a really good chance to win the game.
Looks like David Miller was, you know, left fighting a lone battle. He had a little bit of support, very good support from Gerald Kuche, and between them, they again raised the run rate. But once David Miller was dismissed, that again, for me, you know, made sure the number of runs got away from the number of balls. And then Keshav Maharaj played well, but then he did not have the support from Rabada and Lungi Engidi. You cannot expect Lungi Engidi or Rabada to really also score at 7 or 8 and over. And the Dutch sort of closed the game out very, very professionally. I thought in the last 7, 8, 10 overs of the game, there was never going to be any doubt which was going to be the winning team.
Yeah, I thought Miller, he batted very timidly. It looked like he wanted to play his natural game, but he was quite confined to the net run rate and the pressure that he was under as being that last alone batsman out there. I know you got Jansen, who's more of a bowling all-rounder, but it looked like he never really had that opportunity to unleash and get the South Africans back into the game. So when he fell, that was really where there was not much chance for South Africa, especially with their late order. It looked like more when they were batting that they were trying to not let their net run rate fall as much as it would have if they lost by 70, 80 odd runs. So it looked like that was what they were trying to do towards the end, maintain their net run rate, because we know that in these tournaments that usually, you know, there's a team that, you know, misses out on net run rate due to there being so many teams and so many games. So there's a lot of teams that are very wary of that at the moment. So it looks like that looked like how they're playing it towards the end of their innings was just to maintain that.
Yeah, indeed. So you've already sort of previewed the next game versus Sri Lanka. So you expect it'll be a tight game where the Netherlands might even, as you said, prove to be too heavy for the slightly wounded Sri Lankan team.
I'm very hopeful and very expectant. There's a lot of positives with the Dutch coming off this win, a lot of momentum for them. They've shown that they can play quite well against Sri Lanka in the past. They've had a few close outings, and Sri Lanka missing Hasaranga is a massive out for Sri Lanka, because the Dutch have really shown that they've really struggled against his bowling in the past. Right. Seeing him out at the start of the tournament, I was like, sad, you know, as he's a talented player, and it's always great to watch such a talented player on the big stage. But especially with this Dutch matchup, as we matched up quite well against them in the past, I was happy to see that, because I've known how a few of the players have really struggled against his bowling, and a lot of them got tied down against his bowling, and it's caused some serious collapses in the past. So not having him, he's been quite a thorn in their side. So I'm very expectant and very hopeful. Sri Lanka have struggled quite significantly at times, and I do think the Dutch match up quite well. I think Roelof van der Merwe is going to be a very key player with his left arm spin bowling in that game, and I think that'll match up quite well. So I'm very hopeful that the Dutch can get on a bit of a winning streak, especially going into that Australia Netherlands game the following game after that.
Indeed, so some exciting times if you're a Dutch cricket fan, surely leading up to that final game against India. So a lot to look forward to. Now, if you were to take a look at the other games, the other two games that have since happened, they're a little bit one-sided for the two table toppers. So first of all, Afghanistan versus New Zealand, where New Zealand comfortably beat Afghanistan. So for me, the lack of effectiveness of the new Afghani spinners was one of the talking points, but also how well the New Zealand lower order sort of carried on. They were in a bit of trouble there at 4 for 110 when Darrell Mitchell was dismissed. You know, in 22 overs, they had the run rate, but if they had lost another wicket at that point, you would be thinking, you know, Afghanistan would become very, very dominant, because they're also coming off a big win against England, after all, Afghanistan.
Yeah, I think Latham is incredibly underrated. He's one of my favourite players to watch for New Zealand. Doesn't always get his opportunities to show what he's made of since he comes down low in the order, but I remember there was a game where the Dutch versus New Zealand in the Super League, and the Dutch got New Zealand quite cheaply down, I think 5 down for not many. And Latham came out and ended up hitting 130-odd and bringing them right back into the game. So he's incredibly talented, hasn't necessarily had his opportunities in the shorter form to show what he's made of. And he especially showed leadership in that moment alongside Phillips to really bring New Zealand back into that game after they had that significant collapse in the middle order where they lost 3 quick wickets. But the biggest thing I'd be disappointed at if I was at Afghanistan was the fielding. They say catches win matches. We saw that Ravindra was dropped on naught. Young was dropped on naught. I think there was 6 missed opportunities, 5 missed catches and a missed stumping. Especially on the big stage, and especially after such a famous victory for Afghanistan in the last game, where they had so much go right for them to have this performance was kind of disappointing in that sense, because, you know, you want to see these teams build on the momentum of these famous victories. And but they didn't manage to capitalize in that sense. And they could have put New Zealand under even more pressure than they did. So it was a massive props to Latham and Phillips for the way they stood up and batted and got New Zealand to that really competitive total, which ultimately saw them dominate the rest of the game.
Indeed. So there were as many as three dropped catches in the last three overs of Rashid Khan, if I remember. And these were all after the 40th over. You know, you can't make those mistakes against a top-class team like New Zealand. And also the other thing, I thought Glenn Phillips played a very, very mature role because we know he's a hitter. But in this case, he took some time out of the game. He was going at, you know, 65, 68 strike rate, comfortably batting at that for about 10 overs or so. That I expected, I did not expect, frankly, this sort of maturity from Glenn Phillips. That was also a big win if you're in New Zealand going forward into the tournament. And then Mark Chapman, finally, he'd been quiet throughout the tournament. He got his chance. He scored at about 200. And I think a little bit of an unfortunate thing that Fazal Farooqi could not come back to bowl for Afghanistan. He was injured. Then they were forced to finish with Azmatullah Umarzai, who, you know, they targeted very effectively New Zealanders.
Yeah, I've been really impressed with Phillips' maturity. He was just when he came on the scene, he was that big hitting player. He was a wicket keeper as well. But he's a very matured as a player and developed. He's a very all-round cricketer. He bowls now as well, takes wickets in the big moments, and he knows how to steady the ship as well. After losing early wickets, and then he can power his innings later on in the innings after he's set himself. I was very impressed with Glenn Phillips' innings in this match, which ultimately led to his man of the match performance. It was disappointing to see Afghanistan field the way they did because, you can't miss those opportunities. And that's something that I've been really impressed with the Dutch in this World Cup. They're the second highest rated fielding team for effective catches. I believe last time I saw it was 84% behind India. And sometimes, you know, I've seen in the past, you know, the Dutch butcher some catches in the field, but they're very disciplined in that area. The Dutch have been in this tournament, which I've been really impressed with, and even over the past few tournaments. And I think that's to the benefit of the coaching staff and also being in a more professional setting like the Cricket World Super League. So, on the big stage, you really need to stand up and take those opportunities because you can see how players like Phillips and Latham and even like Chapman later on in the innings can take the game away from you. And that's going to really put more pressure onto your batting lineup, which is ultimately going to, if you don't have those powerful starts in reply, could lead to some big losses, which we ultimately saw with Afghanistan yesterday.
Mm-hmm. And Afghanistan in their chase, I mean, they never really got going. They lost, Rahmanullah Gurbaz and Ibrahim Zadran early. And then Rehmat Shah, Hashmatullah Shahidi, they tried. But what I was really missing was the momentum. They really got behind the run rate. They were only scoring at 3.5. And even up to the 20th over, you then saw they were in a lot of trouble. And they couldn't lift the run rate. Again, a lot of credit to how New Zealand fast bowlers started the game off. The innings off. And then, of course, Santner came into the game and Santner and Lockie Ferguson sort of shut them down.
Yeah, I think the inclusion of Ferguson is an incredible inclusion for the New Zealand bowling attack. He brings something that very different to the rest of their bowlers. And I think they've been one of the better bowling sides of this tournament. So if you fail to put those early partnerships on and build those big partnerships, there was only two partnerships over 20 runs in that innings for Afghanistan, so they weren't really able to build any momentum, which is ultimately going to put a lot of pressure on your batters later on. And we saw how that didn't fare well for the Afghanistan batting attack, and they weren't really able to ever get close in reply to New Zealand.
Indeed. I mean, it was very one-sided the second half, and New Zealand ran away winners also with very significant boost to their net run rate. They still remain at the top of the order. Then coming to the India-Bangladesh game, I think Bangladesh did enough at the start where they really built a solid platform, and even at a very good run rate. But then the middle order floundered a little. But then it came down to the old firm, Mahmudullah and Mushfiqur Rahim, who again lifted the score a little. But if you are Bangladesh, you would be a bit disappointed after that start.
Yeah, 100%. I was really impressed with that game, with the early start from Bangladesh. They really set a great platform, the openers early on. Tanzeed really showed how talented he is, hasn't had many opportunities for Bangladesh yet, but he showed a lot. And so with that early platform, I was thinking they were set for 300, 320 plus runs, which would have been a very competitive total on that pitch. To kind of collapse the way they did was disappointing to see, and it kind of just went downhill from there. You could see how much they were missing Shakib, a batter to kind of really steady the ship in the middle overs and kind of take the momentum back. But they weren't really ever able to handle the pressure after that point and put the momentum back in their favour. And then they did manage to put on some late runs, but you always felt that they were they were 50 runs short, especially with that informed, dynamic batting lineup that India has at the moment, probably looking the most informed team with the bat. So, it was disappointing to see that kind of fell away the way that it did after that real strong start where they were one down for 109 runs or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm. So Tanzeed Hasan, indeed, he's called the new Tamim. So he showed why he's called that. And Litan Das was looking for some runs and he got them. But the real important thing, right, this is how the new Bangladesh would look in a couple of years' time. Because you cannot count on Shakib, Mushfiqur and Mahmudullah to be there forever. And for me, their middle and lower middle has always been an issue. Tawhid Hruday, I thought, might pick up. He even got a start, but he couldn't get going at any strike rate and he got dismissed, right? The skipper for the day, Nasmul Hossain Shanto, he's been in good form, but they couldn't capitalize much of it. But then a bit of credit to the Indian spinners there. I thought Ravindra Jadeja and Kuldeep Yadav, they really pulled things back. Shardul Thakur was also kept under the pressure of runs, but really it goes to the spinners that they really controlled the middle overs very, very well, where, you know, I remember tweeting out 20 overs between 15 and over number 35. Bangladesh only managed something like 72 or 73 runs. That was very, very less. That was only thanks to the spinners.
Yeah, Jadeja bowled amazing. He's just incredibly great bowler to watch. And he really controlled the game throughout those middle orders and really caused a lot of pressure on that Bangladesh batting lineup. So, yeah, I was really impressed with how India bowled, especially after the injury of Hardik Pandya, who's arguably one of their most important players for the balance of that side. Mm-hmm. And it looked like Bangladesh had quite a great opportunity to kind of take the game away from the Indian attack, especially after that first over from Shardul, where he went for quite a fair few runs. That looked like there was an opportunity to take that fifth bowler of theirs to town and put some big runs on him. But Jadeja bowled brilliantly after that and took those key wickets of Das and the captain of the day, Shanto, to really put the pressure back on Bangladesh and ultimately led to them being 50 runs short in the matchup.
Right. I mean, when India started, Rohit Sharma and Shubman Gill started in customary fashion. They attacked the bowlers, scoring at a very high strike rate. I think Shubman Gill will be happy to have completed his 50. And Rohit Sharma, well, he fine-tuned more of his, you know, form. Those clean hits, those pulls, he looks to be in good form. But then Kohli also, who's in good form, converted today. And for me, the only real disappointment was Shreyas Iyer missing out again.
Yeah, the batting lineup is looking the most damaging batting lineup in the tournament and most informed. It's just great to see that the way that they're really taking the game away early and really putting the game in their favour. Key wickets are really essential, but Rohit is looking amazing. To the way he's batting at the strike rate, he's batting at an average of 60 at a strike rate of 130 for the tournament, and he's got the most runs. And he really allowed Shubman Gill to bat slower and build his way into the innings as well, which was great to see. So I'm really expectant with this Indian batting attack, and they have a very great opportunity going forward if they can maintain this form to really dominate teams in that sense. So it'll be interesting to see how they manage going forward without the Hardik Pandya. I don't know how many games he's going to miss with injury, but in especially this next matchup against New Zealand, they'll be a massive out in the sense of their balance to their team. So it will be interesting to see who they bring in as a result of him being out in this next match.
Absolutely. That's one of the concerns. But for me, the other important thing is the lack of practice of the lower middle order. You know, the top five are really, really good. But I, as you know, as an Indian fan, I would like to see a couple of tough games for India when they play New Zealand, England, right? Because you want to have a 300 chases 300 sort of a scenario, or when they are forced to defend 310 India and it goes right down to the wire, because you need to see all the remainder of their batsmen and also a bit of the bowlers having a hit in the middle, but also, you know, trying to defend something where the chasing team is close to the required run rate, but they have to pull it back and try and win. If you're an Indian fan, probably these are the two things you would be looking for. But what if you're a Bangladesh fan? Where do they go from here?
Well, hopefully Shakib is back soon, as he's quite a significant player for them. But they have shown that they can, in moments, that they can perform really well. But yeah, I just with their younger players, I'd look for them to maintain their aggressiveness, and hopefully that that they can continue to show that the talent that they possess as a side going forward. So I will be watching with intrigue to see how Bangladesh continues to improve and show the young talent what they've got.
Absolutely. I mean, they want their younger star to stand up, you know, cause a couple of upsets before the tournament is done. You know, they want to show the outgoing generation that the younger generation is now up to it, up to the job. So if you were to have a quick preview of today's game, Australia-Pakistan, what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, it's a massive game in the context for both teams. Pakistan are a wounded team after that performance. They struggled to deal with under the pressure of being in a very hostile environment in that stadium, where, you know, basically that all the fans were against them, and they had that major collapse which caused a pretty defeating loss against India. So they have a lot to play for and a lot to show in that tournament. And on the end of Australia, Australia will be looking to build some momentum going forward. And this is arguably one of their most important games, because, you know, if they lose this against Pakistan, they'll be two games behind Pakistan. And Pakistan are one of those teams that will be battling out for that third or fourth spot. So in the context of that, this is massive for Australia. So it'll be incredibly interesting to see what they do and how they can look to build momentum going forward in this tournament. I thought that looked a lot more dynamic with the bat in the last game. So I'll be expectant to see how they continue to evolve with the bat going forward, and especially as they prepare, you know, to bring Head back on that side. I don't know the exact timeline of when he'll be back, but it'll be interesting to see if they make any changes in that sense, because I'm not sure. Their side necessarily works with both Labuschagne and Smith in it. So it'll be interesting to see if they make any changes in that sense. But, yeah, it's interesting because both have performed not too bad, but not amazing in the same sense. So it'll be interesting to see who they opt to go for going forward if they have to drop one of them.
That's indeed a tough choice. As things stand, Marnus is even a little bit ahead of Smith when it comes to his performances so far in this World Cup. But Head is expected to become available, right? Travis Head, he can also bowl off spin. He's a very key component right at the top of the order for Australia. Do you see them trying to fit him in the 11 already? Maybe drop Smith or something? Or is that too big of a chance?
I think Labuschagne is the one they're more likely to drop. Although I prefer him maybe over Smith. It's a very tough choice. It's really 50-50. For me, it's more depending on their matchups, I feel. But Smith's the one that I feel like they're more likely to keep in the side for the team balance. But as soon as they can get Head back in the side, They'll bring him back. That combination of Head and Warner at the top of order with Mitchell Marsh coming at three is incredibly dynamic. I think Travis Head is one of the most improved players across all three forms in the last year and a bit. And he definitely can bring take a games away from players. So to see him up the top of the order with Mitch Marsh, who showed the talent that he has in the last match, as well as in the form David Warner in the Indian conditions, I can really see that this Australian batting lineup really take games away through their power in the matches to come. So I'll be watching with intrigue when Head comes in and how that will affect the Australian batting lineup going forward.
Absolutely, because Pakistan would be raring to go at the bit as well. And these two teams never take a step back when they're competing. And it's going to be a wonderful matchup because both teams will be keen to not let go of the chance to put a big foot forward as far as qualifying into the semifinals. Because Pakistan, as you say rightly, are currently sort of ahead in this race when it comes to trying to qualify. Usually England and Australia, you never write them off. England in this basketball form or whatever. But Australia, you never write them off. So between these three teams, whenever they play each other the rest of the tournament, it's going to be crazy competitive, I'm expecting. So I'm expecting a really, really strong game today. So those were mainly all the, let's say, the World Cup topics. Well, one more is sort of Sri Lanka when we look at their injury replacements. We heard last minute that, Chamira and Angelo Matthews have been put on standby to take their places in the squad if any more injuries happen. Your thoughts on those two?
Yeah, it's interesting. The Sri Lanka's focus has been on a lot of the young talent. So it is very interesting to see them bring a player like Angelo Matthews on standby, who's a very seasoned player for them. So, but it makes sense in the sense of losing a player like their captain, Shanaka, who plays a similar role what Angelo Matthews would. So, yeah, it will be interesting to see if those players are needed at any point. But, yeah, they have struggled with injury a lot of their players this tournament, as we've seen as Hasaranga miss out of the tournament. And Tishana missed out on the opening game. And yeah, so it'll be interesting to see if they're required at any point. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens going forward.
Indeed. So we look forward to a competitive game and a competitive rest of the World Cup. Thanks for your thoughts, Isaac. Thanks for joining this podcast. Before we let you go, would you like to plug your social media handles and where our listeners could reach out to you?
Yeah, so KNCB Insider is on Twitter. Give us a follow. We're growing quite significantly. It's been great to see a lot of people jumping on and supporting Dutch cricket. I have some plans to have some Twitter spaces going forward to bring in the fans and involve them, and possibly a podcast as well promoting Dutch cricket and chatting to some of the players and different things like that. So stay tuned for that. My life's been a bit hectic the last few months, getting married and all that. So I'm looking forward to kind of planning out some stuff and creating some great content to engage Dutch cricket supporters and fans out there. So stay tuned, give us a follow on Twitter and stay tuned for what's to come. We're really excited about what we can produce and have for the Dutch fans right across the world.
Perfect. Thank you very much. We wish all our listeners a good day, wherever they may be listening from. Thanks once again, Isaac. Hope to have your company sometime shortly in the future. Bye-bye.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.
Podcast Network.